Good morning. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban changed the constitution, went after the press, and made his friends rich. Why do many Republicans in the U.S. see his leadership as a model? It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Coming up, we...
Traverse City Pride Center is bringing celebration, education, and outdoor adventure together with the return of Paddle for Pride on the Upper Delaware River. Coming up later this June, offering LGBTQ+ individuals and allies an inclusive and family-friendly day of rafting, community building, and learning opportunities. The Deepwater Literary Festival is back and will have a preview of opening night featuring a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, a Grammy-winning pianist, and a soprano praised as a tour de force. Plus, previewing the latest episode of the Radio Catskill Theater podcast, Curtain Call, and the second annual Liberty Folk Festival.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is traveling to Pittsburgh later today to celebrate a deal between U.S. Steel and the Japanese company Nippon Steel. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, there are still a lot of missing details.
When he was in office, former President Biden blocked the acquisition on national security grounds. And as a candidate, Trump promised to do the same, saying a Japanese company shouldn't own the iconic American brand. But Trump has now changed his tune, announcing in a social media post last week that he supports the, quote, planned partnership.
It'll be controlled by the United States. Otherwise, I wouldn't make the deal.
That was Trump on Sunday before boarding Air Force One. He was asked about the management structure.
We'll see what the final is, but they're going to invest millions of dollars in steel, and it's a good company.
More details may come at today's rally. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department delivered a better-than-expected report on inflation. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped about 6 points in early trading.
Consumer prices in April were up 2.1% from a year ago, according to the Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve. Stripping out food and energy prices, core inflation was 2.5%, which is the lowest it's been in more than 4 years. Consumers spent less money on goods last month while socking more money into savings. Spending on services was up in April. The nation's trade deficit fell sharply last month as President Trump's worldwide tariffs kicked in. Imports plunged nearly 20% between March and April, while exports inched up 3.4%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's effort to prevent Harvard University from enrolling or keeping international students. The university can keep enrolling international students as a case proceeds. But Harvard student Fan Chu John is worried. He's from China and just one semester away from completing his master's degree.
Everybody is wondering the plan for next year, whether we should take a leave of absence, whether we should go back home and finish our semester online, or wait for more guidance from the administration at the school.
The Trump administration claims Harvard encourages anti-Semitism, a claim the university has vehemently rejected. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear says authorities are responding to reports of a possible tornado south of Louisville. It's also more than an hour's drive northwest of another Kentucky area that saw numerous deaths and significant damage from a different tornado earlier this month. Writing online, Governor Beshear says the level of severe weather today was unexpected. He warns more storms are coming to Kentucky today. You're listening to NPR. The National Weather Service has issued air quality alerts for parts of northern Minnesota and all of Wisconsin. Smoke is blowing south from Canadian wildfires. Forecasters warn this smoke could spread farther south. The central Canadian province of Manitoba is under a state of wildfire emergency. The Trump administration is ratcheting up pressure on doctors and hospitals that treat transgender children and teenagers. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports.
HHS published a report on pediatric gender dysphoria in early May that emphasized the harms of medical interventions and the benefits of psychotherapy. This week, HHS sent a letter instructing those who treat transgender children to stop relying on standards of care developed by medical groups and instead align their protocols with the HHS review. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services followed up with its own letter to hospitals. Lindsay Dawson directs LGBTQ health policy at KFF.
Well, it's been a priority of the administration from day one to limit access to this care for minors. And it seems to be an all-hands-on-deck approach.
She says the letters could have a chilling effect on providers and fuel misinformation. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News, Washington.
A grand jury in New York has indicted a cryptocurrency investor who is now accused of kidnapping and torturing a man for weeks in Manhattan. John Waltz is accused of trying to force the victim to give up his password to his Bitcoin account. A judge has denied bail for Waltz. An alleged accomplice in the kidnapping has also surrendered to police. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from UKG, delivering HR, pay, time, and culture products and services, dedicated to helping clients build a great workplace for their people. UKG.com/great. UKG, our purpose is people.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. A federal immigration raid at Elegante's Pizzeria in Honesdale on Thursday has reignited local tensions and raised urgent questions about transparency and community safety. This marks the second such raid in Honesdale this spring at the same location. The River Reporter's Liam Mayo, who witnessed the operation firsthand, spoke to Jason Dole last night on the local edition and shared details on the ICE agent's coordinated effort, the arrest of employees, and the response from concerned residents.
Around 11:10, Honesdale community members noticed ICE agents in sort of dressed down uniforms at the Wayne County Courthouse. A little while later, they went into the courthouse, and a little while later, they emerged and sort of got in their full tactical gear and went over to Elegante's, which is a pizza place on Main Street in Honesdale. One man had been arrested by ICE in a similar raid about 2 months ago in March. And this time, agents came in around 11:50. They were there for a couple of hours. Around 12:45, agents led two employees out of the business in handcuffs, one man and one woman. And they stayed another couple of hours after that. And later on, they brought some boxes out, like bankers' filing boxes and a computer desktop.
Wow. So that speaks to a larger ongoing investigation there, potentially. What's the response from the community to all of this?
Yeah, the community really came out in force for this raid. There were a couple of differences from the one that happened in March. There was a little bit more advance notice with the agents sort of stopping at the courthouse before they went over to the business. And between then and now, community members had kind of worked on organizing, worked on spreading information and awareness that this could happen again. And throughout the period that ICE agents were at Elegante's, there were, I'd say, maybe 20 to 30 community members who just sort of posted up at the entrances and the exits to the building with phone cameras, asking agents questions when they could, receiving very little response, taking photos, taking videos, kind of documenting what was happening there.
Wow. Did you talk to any of these folks? What did they have to say?
Yeah. There was a bit of a sense of sort of the horror that this could happen here. There was a sense that watching it happened was kind of important. One woman said, or told the River Reporter, we shouldn't have to watch, but we do, and kind of said that when things like this happen, they erode our faith in what we've been told as citizens is the rule of law, and the protections that we have been told that rule of law enforces to us. So there were a lot of people asking the agents sort of to see a warrant, to provide their badge numbers, something the agents generally did not do. So there were just people trying to do their best out there to enforce transparency to an agency and to an operation that sort of across the country is being conducted without very much transparency.
Yeah, and you cite Borough Mayor Derek Williams, Holmesdale Borough Mayor Derek Williams, as a source in this article. What's the word from Mayor Williams and any other officials in Holmesdale?
Yeah, Mayor Williams was there. He was watching for a good chunk of it. He has kind of been active in talking about this since the first raid that came in. And today he said that transparency was really important at all levels of government, sort of local, state, and federal, and that people's presence here today was just kind of enforcing that transparency.
Is there any word from the restaurant Elegantes, any word from family or acquaintances of the people who were arrested?
No, we haven't heard any word as of yet, nothing officially.
Okay, what will you be looking for next as you continue to report on this?
I think ideally any kind of response from the agencies involved. During the raid in March, the ICE did eventually release the name of the person they had taken in that raid. I believe it was over a month after they had done it, and they didn't end up releasing any kind of firm charges at that time either. Just said there was suspicion of one thing or another. So I don't necessarily expect to have any updates within the near future, but very much hope to.
Okay, well, Liam Mayo's story is up now at riverreporter.com, and thank you so much for being on the scene and giving us this update.
Thank you for having me on.
And this is a developing story. Yesterday, another angle of the incident captured a video viewed by the River Reporter and showed a third person arrested in the incident. And A.G. Howell, district attorney, told the River Reporter, quote, on Thursday, May 29th, 2025, federal agents from Homeland Security served warrants at a local business in Honesdale, Wayne County. Two detectives from the Wayne County District's Attorney Office provided assistance to the federal agents. Regarding any further information, I'm not at liberty to discuss the matter because it is an open investigation and a matter not being handled by my office, end quote. You can follow this story at theriverreporter.com. Now, this June, the Upper Delaware River will serve as more than just a scenic backdrop. It will become a vibrant space for inclusivity, education, and celebration. Paddle for Pride, organized by the Triversity Pride Center, invites LGBTQIA+ individuals and allies to come together for a unique day of rafting, learning, and pride, Saturday, June 28th. Joining us now are Corinne Hinton, event organizer, and Taylor James, director of Triversity, to learn more about the inspiration behind Paddle for Pride, what attendees can expect, and why events like this matter now more than ever. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you both for being here. Taylor, Corinne, I don't know which one of you want to take this, but tell us a little bit more about Paddle for Pride and how this idea originally came to life.
Sure, yeah. I'll kind of take the reins here first. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here and share the scoop on our second annual Paddle for Pride. So Paddle for Pride is an educational, family-friendly rafting event for LGBTQIA+ individuals and allies that's going to be held on June 28th, 2025 at the beautiful Kittatinny Canoes Matamoras Base. This is located at 1147 Delaware Drive, Matamoras, Pennsylvania. It's going to be a full day of fun, community, and river adventure in celebration of pride and diversity.
Taylor, this, you know, pride all month long, folks are having parades and other expressions of pride. But this is such a unique pride event, so specific to our area. What makes it so unique compared to some other pride events and also how it aligns with your goals there at Triversity?
Thank you so much. So, yeah, Triversity is a community center over in Milford, and our mission is really just to bring people together to celebrate diversity, to celebrate individuals. And we're so excited about this event because it really offers a unique opportunity to do that. I think everyone who grows up around here kind of grows up at least going down the river once with their friends, with their families. And so it was like a really awesome opportunity to bring families and people of all ages together to really just have a great day and feel safe and feel welcomed and inspired. And I think that's really what we're looking for creating right now is moments of safety and moments of queer joy. And this event really offers that opportunity for everybody involved.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit more about that. Why is it important to hold events like Paddle for Pride, specifically now for LGBTQIA+ community and allies?
Well, I think we are seeing an erosion of our safe spaces and an erosion of our rights right now, unfortunately, as LGBTQ+ people. And so it's more crucial right now than ever to just exist and to be seen and to support each other. It's as we're seeing kind of across the nation, things are getting a little more hostile, a little more unwelcoming for certain individuals in our community. And we really just want to continue being that safe haven for those people and being a place where people are built up and offering events like Paddle for Pride, where someone can just come and experience that most people get here, but that they've never necessarily felt welcome to. So this event geared towards them, it encourages them to come out and experience something that everyone around here should experience. And then just in general, Pride is just incredible to celebrate right now.
Corinne, I was going to ask you too, what kind of impact do you hope this event will have on attendees and the wider community?
Yeah, so again, we're just really trying to get people from the tri-state area, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, out in, you know, on the river and participating in river recreation. Again, we don't typically get these types of safe spaces to, you know, engage in these types of opportunities. And so we want to create that safe space and we want people to feel welcome on the Upper Delaware River and that they can show their pride and be who they are.
So if you want to show your pride, show your alliance as well, but you're not really familiar with rafting, is it accessible for beginners as well?
Of course, yes. So we're actually going to have the National Canoe Safety Patrol. I know that they've been on the radio with you a few times here, and they're going to be providing safety for the event. So if you've never been in a raft before, we're actually going to have educational activities beforehand to show you how to paddle and how to wear a life jacket properly and what you do if you fall out of a raft and just water safety in general, as well as having those water safety personnel on the water with us, you know, for any accidents or, you know, for safety.
River safety, always important. Let's talk a little bit about some of the family-friendly kids and pets even components of the day. What kind of things are happening there?
Right. Yeah. So the day is going to kick off with interactive activities from 9 to 10 a.m. And that's free and open to everyone. And then from 10:30 to 4, we'll hit the water for the guided rafting trip. And so we're offering short, engaging sessions on LGBTQIA plus history. So LGBTQIA plus history in water sports, and river ecology and paddling safety. So we're celebrating who we are while also learning and connecting with nature.
Let's remind folks where they can learn more. Do they need to sign up or register? What are the logistics there?
Yeah, so it's really easy, super simple. You can actually just Google Triversity Paddle for Pride and our website will come up. You navigate to our website page and scroll all the way down. You'll find our event page for Paddle for Pride and a QR code right there to get you signed up with more information.
Before we go, just some personal perspective. Taylor, what does this event mean to you coming together each year?
The first time when we sat down to do this last year for the first time and kind of birthed this idea, which Corinne really spearheaded, it meant so much to anytime that I get the opportunity to combine pride with nature or pride with community, which I mean it is, but any chance we get to do that is so impactful to this area because like I said, a lot of people around here don't ever get to experience one pride event. They don't. So having that accessibility for our families, for the kids from my teen group and from my youth group and for their parents to just like come and have a good, fun day and celebrate queer joy, it really changes lives and it changes hearts to have these kinds of events. And so I want to do as many of them as I possibly can right now because I think they're so necessary. And I'm so thankful to Corinne and everyone who has been organizing this event. It's going to be incredible. We really hope you guys come down.
Corinne, what personally motivates you to organize this event?
Yeah, so I myself am an environmental scientist outside of being a volunteer for Triversity. And so I have a strong connection to the natural world. And I believe the best way to make a change in this world, a positive difference, and moving towards unity as a community is to teach others and to have these community outreach events where we can teach others about queerness in nature and our natural world and how we are a part of nature and not apart from it. Any opportunity I get to do that, I will always volunteer my time. And so I'm hoping that I can meet a bunch of new people and foster those connections with them to make a lasting difference.
That's Corinne Hinton, event organizer of Paddle for Pride, organized by the Triversity Pride Center. We've also been talking to Taylor James, director of Triversity. Triversity is a Pride Center committed to serving the LGBTQ plus community in the tri-state region of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. More information about Triversity's mission and Paddle for Pride at TriversityCenter.org. Corinne, Taylor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us, Tim. We appreciate you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a preview of opening night at the Deepwater Literary Festival. Aaron Hicklin is here. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we explore two sides of Mark Giuliano's brain with two different bands from two hemispheres of the globe. From swing to rock to electronic music, the drummer paves the way for a new kind of jazz.
Emotionally, when I'm playing with both projects, I'm playing from the same place.
That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
This week on Science Friday, the science of making a big Mission Impossible stunt.
We've got this massive mechanical set on these gimbal that's moving and rolling and pitching and grinding all these gears. And yeah, if I don't do my job right, someone's definitely going to get hurt.
And we're turning the binoculars around to take a look at the surprisingly high-stakes world of birding. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
2 to 4 p.m. today on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Deepwater Literary Festival is back with an unforgettable opening night of poetry and music that promises to move and inspire. To tell us more about what's in store is Aaron Hicklin, the festival's founder and creative force. Aaron Hicklin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, too?
Good. Thank you for being here. We've been talking to you about Deepwater Literary Festival, and we are proud at Radio Catskill to be a media sponsor. So we're going to be bringing folks previews over the next weeks about what's going on. First up, opening night, you're opening with an incredible moving event titled I Am Living, I Remember You. Tell us a little bit more about this evening, this opening night, and how it came together with these diverse voices.
Sure. Well, I hope we'll have Ricky Ian Gordon on the line shortly to talk about it. But this came out of a conversation I had with Ricky, who's a composer and conductor. He had lost a partner to AIDS in the 1990s. And sometime after that came into the orbit of Marie Howe. Now, Marie Howe is a highly regarded poet. She just won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry, the 2025 Pulitzer Prize. And she had written a collection of poems called What the Living Do. They're incredible. Really beautiful kind of odes, really, to the ordinary things, the sort of tasks, the minutiae of our daily lives as a kind of letter to her lost brother, but in poetry form. And Ricky had taken these poems and turn them into songs, operatic songs. So we'll have at the festival Marie Howe reading the poems and then Ricky playing them on piano with a soprano, Jennifer Zetlin, singing them.
And Maria Howe just won the 2025 Pulitzer Prize for poetry.
She did.
I mean, that's
indeed.
Huge. That's amazing.
Very major. Yeah, she has a collection out called New and Selected Works. It actually includes the poems from What the Living Do. And that's the specific book that won the Pulitzer Prize. She has a home in Hudson Valley, so she's not too far away. She had been unavailable initially. There was a lot of hair pulling. And angst. And then last week we got a note that her schedule had changed and she could now make the festival. So we scrambled to change the listing and we're all thrilled.
Got to do what you got to do, Aaron.
Exactly.
She'll be wearing a hat because of the hair pulling. I'm kidding. Let's listen to a little bit. Here's Ricky now, but let's listen to a little bit of the composition, What the Living Do. This is sung by Rebecca Luker and this is composed by Ricky Ian Gordon. Let's listen to a little bit of that while we get Ricky on the line.
Johnny, the kitchen sink has been clogged for days. Some utensil probably fell down there. And the Drano won't work. That smells dangerous. And the crusty dishes have piled up. Waiting for the plumber, I still haven't called. This is the everyday we spoke of. It's winter again. The sky's a deep, headstrong blue, and the sunlight pours through the open living room window. Because the heat's on too high in here, and I can't turn it off.
That is What the Living Do. Poetry from Marie Howe, such music by Ricky Ian Gordon, sung by Rebecca Luker, Broadway legend, I guess, right? Uh-huh. I would call her a legend. We know Rebecca Luker. It's something so powerful about combining poetry and music in this live performance. What are you hoping this experience will create for the audience?
Well, you know, the theme of this year's festival is metamorphosis and transformation. And one angle to sort of explore that, to tackle that, is to think about transformation as a creative process. So, you know, writing itself is metamorphosis. So Marie Howe, in writing that poetry, is transforming an experience, the loss of her brother, her daily life, these sort of observations into poetry form. And then Ricky is taking those poems and converting them into songs. So that's an act of transformation that we want to pay homage to.
And I think we actually now have Ricky on the phone. Excellent. Ricky, good morning. I think we got you.
Good morning. I'm here.
that strange phone number was us calling. So hi.
Yes. Hi.
Ricky, we were just talking about this combination of poetry and music. We heard a little bit of Rebecca Luker singing your composition of What the Living Do. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the inspiration for you there and this, you know, extraordinary combination of poetry and music?
The poetry was my first love when I was a little boy because it's what my sisters used to do to put me to bed. They would read me poetry. So when I grew up, poetry for me was like balm. It was like lullaby. And no matter what kind of phases I went through in my life, poetry was what always informed me more than anything else. And I met Marie Howe when I had lost my partner after obviously losing, you know, scores of others. And Marie, I felt like no other poet I had ever read dealt with loss with the kind of radiance and simplicity that was unparalleled. And I suppose at that time it was like her poems were like a Bible to me. I started memorizing them. I couldn't speak them without crying. And the process for me of setting a poem to music is obviously first I have to have a deep connection with it, but I memorize it. And I sort of let it live inside myself for a little while until I make a gesture on its behalf. And with Marie's poems, they came very natural to me, and they still do. It's exactly the kind of words I want to set to music because of the depth of their meaning and the simplicity of the delivery. And that combination with music, because music is already adding a level of abstractness and complexity to words in the first place. So if you pick a very obscure, difficult to understand poem, and then you set it to music, you have a lot of information coming at you. But Marie's poems lend themselves to music because it's as if you're talking to the audience. It's as if you're speaking to someone, which is exactly what Marie is doing. So my hope in setting Marie's poems to music is that they keep their directness and their clear-eyed delivery, but that something else is added, like a jewel in a setting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, the Deepwater Literary Festival has always embraced this idea that literature can be immersive and multidimensional. So how do you see the festival transforming this relationship between writers and readers and performers?
Well, I love that you want to open with this idea of transformation because for me, it's all about first the poem transforms me, and then I transform the poem, and then hopefully what happens to the listener is they're getting both things. You know, art is an act of transformation, and so it's funny. I think of the word transmogrification. It's a spiritual experience, isn't it? I mean, the poem takes us to another level, and then music, in its ephemeral nature, it becomes ethereal.
And Aaron, let's remind folks about the opening night, when that's coming up in Narrowsburg, and where folks can get more information about not just the opening night, but the whole festival.
Sure. So the website is deepwaterfestival.com. And it's live. You can go and see the entire program, at least 30 events. This opening night, Midsummer Night's Eve concert begins at 7 p.m. on Friday, the 20th of June, at the Tustin Theatre, which is a wonderful space in Narrowsburg. Tickets are moving, so don't delay. Go on the website, book your ticket now, and plan your weekend. We have so many events over those 2 days. Many are free or by donation. Some have a very small charge. And I just really like what Ricky said there. Art is an act of transformation. We didn't have to lean in too hard into this theme because everything we're doing, everything we're presenting is about transformation and metamorphosis.
The Deepwater Literary Festival, Aaron Hicklin, festival organizer, and Ricky Ian Gordon, who has composed some lovely, lovely music here. And we look forward to seeing you here the metropolis of Narrowsburg at the in the middle of the month.
Me too. I love the Tustin Theater, so I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks for putting up with us with our technical difficulties here, but we got you.
That's okay. I'll see you on the 20th. Right. Bye.
Bye.
Aaron, thank you so much, and we'll get more previews from you coming up in the coming weeks then, right?
You will indeed. I'll be back, I think, next week, right?
All right. Yes, I think so. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, the latest edition of our theater podcast, Curtain Call. Tom Candela is here. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on The Wuggle Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill. Next time, we'll be hearing songs about insects. Flies, bees, hornets, beetles and moths. So please join me on Sunday afternoon at 3. Oh, and spiders. Yes, I know, they're not insects, but we'll be covering them too.
Mm-hmm. The demonization of fact-based journalism is one of democracy's biggest threats, as the number of local newsrooms has dwindled, leaving disinformation to fill the void. This station is an oasis amid all the noise and fiction by building bridges and holding people to account. We do it thanks to you. You give us the tools we need to fight attacks on truth by donating to this station. Here's how.
Give what you can at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, our new theater podcast is Curtain Call, hosted by Tom Candela. It drops every Friday, and he's here with a preview of today's episode. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me once again. Yeah, so, you know, I don't know if you know this, but back in the day when I was back, you know, in theater, I was a puppeteer as well.
Did not know that, Tom.
Yes, and I worked for many different companies in New York and New Jersey and stuff like that. Traveled through Southeast Asia on a tour. But anyway, I'm always looking for guests to come on Curtain Call. And I was looking through Canvas Magazine a couple of months back. And I found this really, really interesting article about a puppet company that was out there called Up in Arms. And I thought, wow, this is great. I love puppetry. I'd love to have them on Curtain Call. So I reached out to their artistic director, Dove Mainly, and joined collaborator is Alex Ishkanian. And I was able to reach out to Dove and get them to come on the show. And we had this great conversation. It brought back a lot of memories for me of being out on tour and working with puppet companies. Anyway, these two guys have this company called Up in Arms, and they're a Hudson Valley-based puppet company, and they bring original musical stories to schools, libraries, and theaters throughout the country. And they're on tour right now with some of their shows.
We're going to get to a clip of that conversation in just a minute, but first, back to you. I want to ask you, do you have a particular character or puppet that you toured with, or was it a bunch of different ones, or do you have a favorite?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should ask. Through Southeast Asia, I was with a company called Fantasy Factory. It was actually out of Galilee, Pennsylvania. That's how I came to this area. And I was the lead character in their show. It was a variety show, but it was hosted by a giant firefly named Fippy. And I was Fippy the Firefly.
Of course. Yes.
And that was throughout Southeast Asia. I mean, I was like a star. I played for the Princess of Thailand.
What?
Yes. He was one of the audience members, and she was about 7 or 8 years old, and she came into the theater, and the entire theater stands up and everyone bows before her.
Wow.
This little 6-year-old girl. They had a little throne in the front of the theater, the front row, a little throne for her where she sat, and we performed for her.
That's amazing.
It's crazy.
I am,
right?
Sensing another podcast here.
There's
Fippy the Firefly. Oh, yeah. Truth Untold.
Interview myself.
That's amazing. Well, let's get a clip here from your latest edition of Curtain Call, which is our local theater podcast that you host, and your conversation with the folks from the Up in Arms company of puppeteers here in the Hudson Valley.
Yep. Today, we're diving into a world where puppets aren't just playthings. They're storytellers, educators, and heroes. My guest is David Dove Mainly, the founder and artistic director of Up in Arms, a Hudson Valley-based puppet company that's entertaining and inspiring children all over the country with high-quality musical puppet theater. And also joining us today is his creative collaborator, Alex Ishkanian. Alex is an educator and the writer behind many of these heartfelt musicals. Dove, Alex, welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
It's great to be here.
Very happy to have both of you. So I'm going to start with you, Dove. What inspired you to found Up in Arms, and how did your experiences with puppetry as a child shape the company's direction?
Sure. I was a huge Muppet and Sesame Street fan when I was a kid. So I was always captivated by puppets as a kid, and I was drawn to theater and singing. As I got older, I was performing in community theater, and it was just something that called me back and decided that I wanted to make my puppet company Up in Arms. And I came across Alex Ishkanian, an educator down in New Jersey, and I saw that he was doing a one-man anti-bullying show and reached out to him to see if he would join me on this venture. And we decided to collaborate, and he wrote his one-man show into a script between all of these different puppet characters that I created.
So, Alex, yeah. How did you collaborate with Dove creating these stories? You know, what was the dynamic between script, music, and puppetry? How did you make that transition for yourself?
So I wrote the show in hopes that maybe I could perform it at schools, which I did. And Dove was a blessing that it so happened that he contacted me and said, could you convert the Helping Drew show to a puppet show?
Okay.
And I said, yes, that would be perfect because I'm going back to teaching and it'd be great to have life to it. So back when I wrote it, bullying, of course, was mentioned in schools.
Right.
But it wasn't as mentioned as it would have been 2 or 3 years later. So I started to write the show. I believe it was like 2009, 2010. And I was almost afraid to use the word bullying for the K first and second grade because it wasn't really being used that much, that word. But I used teasing.
Okay.
I was afraid to use the word bullying at first because I thought maybe the K through second schools might find it offensive, like bullying. That's such a strong word. But then eventually it evolved by the time Dove contacted me and we were moving forward. The word bullying was used very directly.
Okay. All right. And the Dove, so the shows basically blend curriculum, right, with engaging musical narratives. How do you balance that entertainment with education in your productions?
Well, I think as a producer, I also came from a musical theater background. So I'm just looking for something that's going to entertain and engage the audience. And Alex, being the teacher, would try to find those curriculum connections. And because Alex also has this musical theater background as well, I think both of us just work so well together, and that's why he was such a natural to continue working with me for my first four shows, because Alex really got what I was going for, and they're just incredibly entertaining. Alex does a beautiful, beautiful job in writing the music as well as the book. And what's important when you're writing shows for puppets is that you're reflecting their real challenges, emotion, experiences that they have. So they trust the characters in the show. They see them as friends or trusted companions, and it really opens them up to explore those issues.
And so how do you find working together now? Is it still as collaborative as it is, as it was?
Right now, we had retired OT who reached out, and she wanted to create a show called Captain Me. And it's all about empowering kids with self-determination, especially kids with disabilities. And she found me and asked me about creating a show because she loved my puppets. And she wanted some suggestions on how to get a script written. And I said, I know the perfect person.
Okay.
So I brought Alex on board, and it's just Alex and I have been able to work as before. Alex is doing the script and I'm building the puppets for this new show, Captain Me, for our friend Amy Coopersmith now.
But Dove, while working on that, I would call Dove and I'd say, I just want to run this by you. How would this seem with the puppets? And so it was a great blessing to have Dove working on this project along with Amy, because I could really get his feedback as I went along.
I'd like to speak a little bit about monster intelligence. It's based on Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. So explain a little bit about that for our listeners, how you came up with the idea and how you were able to integrate this to make it something interesting for children.
Oh, well, I will say when I first wanted to do this show, I said to Alex, I want to create a show about a little monster finding his voice. It was just kind of this vague notion. And I also challenged Alex by saying, let's do a bunch of different styles of music for this one. So Monster Intelligence was really stretching all of our creative juices here. And then I'll turn it over to Alex because, again, he was just brilliant with how to write it for kids and how to write it for these curriculum standards.
I received my elementary certification through Alternate Route. And back in the 90s, we had a lot of sessions on teaching kids in lots of different ways. and Howard Gardner did the multiple intelligences. And I was just fascinated in my teaching program about that because I thought that's so cool that every kind of intelligence, whether it's the more typical would be the math intelligence or reading and writing, but there's someone could be so talented at movement or they could be talented with art. So Howard Gardner allowed for all these intelligences to be equally valued. So when Dove said a monster trying to find their own voice, I thought, well, maybe that voice could have to do with him not doing that well in school. How can he learn in a way that is capitalizing on what he's already blessed at?
So it's sort of like finding the method of learning that best suits an individual child, right?
Yes, absolutely. And including motivating factors of learning. The kid knows, wow, I can express my learning through dance or writing a song. I can express this history lesson. That also is a big motivator as well. And so, yes, so, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about Tortoise and the Hare's Race to Health, because in this production, you're taking basically a classic fable and you're adding this wellness twist to it.
We had the libraries every summer do a summer library reading program, and I believe that the topic was health for that particular summer. We always wanted to do something that had a little recognition. So Tortoise and Hare, Aesop's Fables definitely had some recognition, and Alex suggested it and ran with it.
Well, in this case, what I did was it was years have passed and Hare is challenging Tortoise to another race. It was what would happen if Tortoise is challenged to another race and how he would approach the race this time to make sure he wins.
Now, going to Waffle and Friends. Now, is this a solo show, Dove?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's a classic puppet variety show, 5-minute sketches of different acts with different style of puppets.
Give us an idea of where you're touring and what's happening with that show.
Sure, sure. After the Wolf Trap shows, I'm going to be touring the Charlottesville, Virginia libraries from June 24th to the 27th. Waffle and Friends comes back to the Hudson Valley July 6th. We're playing the Mid-Hudson Discovery Museum in Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm.
Garrison, the library down in Garrison on July 31st. The Milton Library on August 6th in Milton, New York. And we'll actually be performing Tortoise and Hare's
In Hare's Place, yes.
In Wallkill on August 14th,
Well, so give us your website address here so that people can go and check it out to find out exactly where these shows are, because it's a lot of fun.
So they can find us online at www.upinarms.biz, B-I-Z. There's links on there to our Facebook and Instagram. So if you follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Up in Arms Puppets, you can see when our local shows are happening.
Great. And if there's an educator or principal out there who is interested in bringing one of your shows to their school or their community, is this the way they would do it? Directly going to your website, or is there a number they need to call? Or
absolutely. There's a contact form right on the website if they want to fill out the information and send it through the website, or they can always email me directly at upinarmspuppets@gmail.com.
I want to thank our guests today, two of the creators and founders of Up in Arms Puppetry. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure speaking with both of you today.
Likewise, Tom. Thank you.
And you can hear Tom's full conversation with the Up in Arms folks at our website, wjffradio.org, on the podcast Curtain Call, and also check out previous episodes of other local theater folks. The new episodes drop every Friday. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the second annual Liberty Folk Festival. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life, most of them waited over a year to take a citizenship test. But then, when the day finally came, he got this feeling.
It's a trap.
That was the immediate thought? You were
immediate. I have not even, thought twice about it.
And so, he had to make a decision. Show up, or risk deportation, or go into hiding. His choice. This week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes on Donald Trump's devastating lawsuit against CBS.
I know there's going to be a settlement, and then we will hopefully still be around, turning a new page.
But you wouldn't walk away.
Depends.
Leslie Stahl, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
You are listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This evening, the Liberty Museum and Arts Center will come alive with the sounds of folk music as the Sullivan County Performing Arts Center presents the second annual Folk Festival. It's a special evening celebrating the 40th anniversary of the iconic Pursuit of Happiness Cafe, a landmark on the local music scene. Headlining the night is acclaimed folk artist Rod McDonald, and he joins us now to talk about the festival and what keeps the folk spirit alive. Rod, good morning.
Morning, Tim.
What does it mean to you to be a part of this celebration marking the 40 years of the Pursuit of Happiness Cafe at the Folk Festival tonight?
Time flies, doesn't it? I remember the Pursuit. It was a fun place to work at.
Yeah, for folks who don't know about it, can you kind of describe it a little bit more? I mentioned it was a landmark on the local music scene. What made it such a great place for musicians?
I think that it started out kind of as an extension of the club we had going in Greenwich Village. A couple of the members of our music cooperative in Greenwich Village moved up to Liberty and started the Pursuit and started bringing some of us up to play up here.
Yeah,
that's how I first came to Liberty, actually, was for the Pursuit.
And you're headlining this second annual Folk Festival tonight. What can audience expect from your performances this evening?
I've got some new songs and some, you know, stuff that people will know that I've been singing for a while. Mark Dan is also joining me on the bass, and we've played the museum a few times. I think it'll be fun to share some of our newer work with them and with the folks, and just do a real concert for everybody.
And you've shared stages around the world, and the Liberty Museum is a more intimate space. How does that compare for your performances and for the audience experience?
I like it. I like the museum. I don't know. It's the size of the audience doesn't matter so much to me as much as kind of the vibe and the feeling that goes around, and it's usually pretty good there. Mm-hmm.
And you got special guests, Alex Crossland, Miranda Hardy, Justin Sutherland. Have you performed with them before?
I think so, yes. I know Miranda is Jack Hardy's daughter, and also Mark Dan, who plays bass with me, recorded Miranda's CDs. So we're all familiar with her music a bit. I'm not as familiar with Justin and Alex, but I'm looking forward to hearing them.
And Angie Page's daughter as well, host of Folk Plus here on Radio Catskill on Sundays at 2.
Yes, of course. That's right.
Any songs you're especially looking forward to playing at this event tonight, or any themes that you feel are particularly timely right now?
You just had a blurb for the lawsuit of the Trump administration against CBS. Of course, there's a concerted effort going around to silence people and to kind of, I don't know what the word is, to put out a distorted view of whatever's going on. I guess I'm just going to keep singing the songs that I write, you know, about what's going on around us in the world today. And some of my longtime, you know, standards and more personal songs too.
Yeah.
I guess one of my newer songs that people have been asking about is a song called Keep 'Em Stupid about banning books. It's kind of written from a humorous perspective, but it has a message. So I'll definitely be playing that.
Yeah.
I have another new song that somebody else just tried to call me at the same time. I have a song that was inspired actually by listening to a radio interview with a woman who was asked how she felt about all the firings in the government. And she said that she sat at her desk and watched all kinds of people filing by, carrying the boxes of their belongings as they were being shoved out the door. And then they asked her how she felt about it. And she said, oh, I think it's great. You know, the government has too many workers or something like that. It's what I voted for, she said. And I thought, well, you're probably next, you know, and then we'll see how you feel about it then. So that's a song that is on YouTube that I released as a video about a month ago called Everyone But You. Go check it out.
Yeah. Well, folks can check you out along with your special guest tonight at the Liberty Folk Festival at the Liberty Museum on Main Street in Liberty. It's tonight at 6:30. There's ticket information and more information at SullivanPerformingArts.com. Rod, thanks for checking in this morning and have a great show.
Thank you, Tim. All right. Appreciate it.
And before we go, Tom Candela was just here. Tom Candela and his friends for more than 30 years used to gather each week to play Dungeons & Dragons. But in 2020, disagreements about politics broke up their game. Tom was the only one who had voted for Donald Trump. He and fellow player Michael Youssef came to StoryCorps to talk about what happened. They were part of the One Small Step program. And their conversation aired this morning on NPR's Morning Edition. Let's take a listen.
We started around 1986. We would rent a hotel in the Catskills and play D&D for the entire weekend.
Eating every junk food known to mankind. Yeah. And I remember my wife is 8 months pregnant and the phone rings.
We're all sitting there knowing what this could be. And he's like, are you sure?
I don't really want to give up the game right now. We're in the middle
of something. Yeah, we're in the middle of a battle. And we're like... Are you kidding me? Get off the phone. I'm driving you home.
But these are the things that actually make it us closer as a group.
Absolutely.
You have a fight with the wife or whatever. So we became our own little group therapy with each other,
That's right.
too.
The Dungeon Master, Steve, and I were always close friends. He was the best man at my first wedding. I would use the combinations of his name as my passwords.
Can you tell me then what I call the divorce or the schism? That happened during our last time we played.
Well, you're talking about, we're playing one time on Zoom during the COVID years. And Steve and I, he never called me Tom and I never called him Steve. We had a nickname.
That we can't say on radio.
That we won't say on the radio. And he said to me, Tom, it's your turn. Who the hell is Tom?
Yeah.
When he used my name like that, something was wrong. I immediately called him up. He didn't pick up. And then he sent me an email. The first line was, obviously, this is about Trump. The gist of it was how my support for Trump was unacceptable to him. And basically, I can't be friends with you right now. At that point, partly out of anger, I'll admit it, I decided to remove myself from the group.
When that happened, it caught me totally off guard. Let me tell you how I deal with this thing. Because I look at our country, I look at me and you, and... I would only focus on the differences. But then and I go, wait a minute. Of the 10,000 things that make up a human being, we have 20 things that we strongly disagree with. The other 9,980 things that we both agree on.
Yeah. If you live in certainty all the time, and I'm not talking about just politics now. I mean, certainty about anything.
Yeah, sure. Yankees versus Mets.
Right. Yeah. Yankees versus Mets, whatever it might be. You're cutting yourself off from the possibilities.
Yeah. Thomas, I love you. And I want to get you back in the game because the group could use you. Another character to get hit by arrows. So, you know, I'm glad we had this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
And that was our own Tom Candela and his friend Michael Youssef reunited on StoryCorps. You can hear that at StoryCorps.org. Special thanks to our StoryCorps producers, Isabel Braverman, Judy Balaban, and Ronald Kelson. And thanks to you for listening. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, NACL.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Take a dive into the deep end, the ultimate rock music journey. Deep cuts, live tracks, and rare gems from rock, psychedelia, country, jazz, and blues. Experience the deep cuts on the deep end. Friday nights at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, times of clouds and sun today, but a shower in the area this afternoon and some heavy downpours tonight. Today's high 71, low 54 tonight. Tomorrow, a shower, thunderstorm possible, high 57. And Sunday, no rain, but cooler, breezy, a shower possible, high 56.